Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer. Groovy.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to our show.
Welcome to the show. The show's about to start.
Sometimes I get a little mixed up in what show I'm actually in at the moment.
I guess. Thanks everybody for joining
Indie
us
Music
again.
Podcast where we don't know where we're at.
Thanks everyone for joining us on the Indie Music Podcast. Great to have you here.
So we discovered last week that the trilogy, we have like busted the seams on it. And it's
we spilled over.
Yeah, we spilled over. And so it's a 4-part series now, at least. And that's counting the show. Because we discovered at the end of the show that we were remiss in not covering some what we believe are some really important points. And that would be your branding and marketing and advertising. And we really didn't get into that too much because we were kind of stuck on publishing and I thought we could do better. So I wanted to get a little bit deeper into some of the things after you publish that that we think are important. I think there's a couple things here that Matt with, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding, Matt, is that you have some graphic design skills.
Yes, I used to be a graphic designer, and I studied graphic design for 2 years, as a matter of fact.
Right.
I was going to say that, you know, this episode on branding and marketing and whatnot, this, while this is a spillover from the trilogy, a lot of the points I think that we're about to talk about could probably just be general branding tips for indie musicians and their music entrepreneurship.
I think that's true. I think you could probably take this out to lots of different types of individuals or entities and the types of things they want to promote or want to, you know, create a brand of. And musicians definitely do this. You know, the bands or the independent musicians are creating their own brand, which is themselves or the group of people that makes up the band name and the visual aspects that are related to even audio types of things that become synonymous with the thinking of and identifying with that individual or that band.
Yeah, and I've been thinking a lot about branding lately and how a lot of people think of it as kind of a negative term. They think of it as like corporate, like, I don't know. The first thing you think of when you hear branding, you think of some corporate tool in a 3-piece suit talking about Coca-Cola in a focus group or something like that. But really, you know, you have a personal brand, which is how you personally present yourself in the world and in your profession. And everybody who has you know, their own music business with, you know, if you're just a musician who is selling your MP3s on SoundCloud, you have a music business and you have a brand, whether you know it and cultivate it and curate it or not. What I think of as a brand now is different than what I used to think of. And I think of it now as it's basically a way of demonstrating the personality of the entity, which is your business, or in this case, the entity, which is your podcast. Your podcast has a personality. And that personality is determined by you, who is doing the podcast. We talked a little about this last time, you know, who your target audience is, who you're aiming to have be your listener or the recipient of your creative output. And branding is kind of a way of shortcutting what's another word for that? Like giving in terms of like symbols and colors and things is kind of a way of shortcutting information that you want to put out there, like the choice of font you use or the choice of colors or the choice of images. They all are signals for the personality
between things.
Yeah, there's symbols of the personality, and they're a way of telling quickly at a glance, oh, this is what this is about. And it should be consistent. And my first advice is to kind of come up with that personality and write yourself a style guide. I was just talking about this with somebody on Twitter this morning. Write yourself a style guide. Write down the colors that you want to use. Write down the fonts that you want to use. Kind of get some ideas for a logo and or cover art. And put that in a Google sheet so that people can refer to it. And if you have questions about your what you're going to do on your website and questions about what you're going to do on your Instagram posts, you know, refer back to your style guide and think of those things as living documents. Don't think of those things as gospel. So when we went to do our website, we went through a couple iterations of that, but we kind of had some things in mind about what we wanted it to look like. And I don't know that we wrote it down at first, but we kind of had some ideas. Do you remember anything about how we came up with the idea for what it looked like? I think we just kind of went through some fonts and said, you know what, this looks like us.
The fonts were easy. I mean, you basically chose those and were like, do you like that? And I was like, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, we flipped through a few. You know, you want to be simple with font.
I was going to say that we went through a couple iterations of our podcast, like image of the the cover, you know?
Yeah, we went through a couple iterations of the cover image on the website. Went through a couple iterations of our podcast cover before we really put it out there.
Well, you'll even see some changes if you go back to like our first couple shows. I think there's a difference in our show image. What do you actually call it? Because it's not really a logo.
No, I call it a cover image.
Yeah, cover image.
I don't know what else to call it.
There's a difference. I believe we had a different cover image for the first couple shows, and then we.
Well, I think we had to change the name, didn't we?
Oh, we had to change the name a little bit. Yeah. And
there was
and
a collision with another name.
Yeah. And that wasn't as a result of any problems or cease and desist or anything. That was for us to be able to be found easier and not confused with another podcast of a similar name.
And the image is not something that I just grabbed off of, Google image search or something and used, surreptitiously. I actually paid for that stock photo from a 123RF, which is a site that I use for images for album illustrations and cover art. It doesn't cost very much, but I just wanted to put that out there. Just don't grab somebody's image without permission and throw it up without, giving them credit.
We've kind of modified that same image in different ways to create banners and background images and things like that. And so that it's pretty darn consistent anywhere that you go.
Well, consistency, that's the whole point of the branding thing. And so once you pick your style guide, once you have your logo, your cover image, your fonts and all that stuff, you have to keep that consistent across everything because that's why it's a shortcut. That's why it's a symbol. Because once people start to see it, they'll go, oh, that's those guys. Oh, that's a post from that podcast I listened to. Because if you keep changing your image or don't keep it up to date across all the places that you are, people aren't going to recognize you, and then the whole point is lost.
Last show, I think it was last show, I mentioned that we're in a season with ideas of actually changing that image at the end of the season and starting the next season. Do you think that's a good idea then, based on branding and consistency?
I think we would keep the image and maybe update the color is how I was kind of picturing it.
Okay, so we have a kind of a continuity of the basic image itself, but then do some change in colors and some of the... Probably keep the same fonts and things like that,
yep.
But start looking into some different themes around the same assets that we're using.
Yeah. And what I was going to say about fonts a minute ago was that from a design perspective, you generally want to pick, and this goes for websites as well, you generally want to pick two. You want to pick a header font for your titles and your headers, and then you want to pick a body font. And once you start to go past, I want to say three, it just gets to be too visually confusing. So it's okay to have like one for your big splash title, a different one for your headers, and then a third one for your body. But you don't really want to go beyond two or three fonts on any branded piece.
And another aspect of this that we're using Google fonts, correct?
Yeah, and I like those. That's a new thing to me. They have a lot to choose from. I mean, it took me a better part of a Saturday morning to go through a whole bunch of fonts and like pick the ones I thought looked good on the website.
Yeah. Let me talk about something real quick that most people wouldn't really consider. And one of the aspects of doing something like with Google fonts is that we actually get those fonts and they're embedded into our webpage. And what that means is if you don't actually have that font on your computer, which you likely do not, okay, in this case, then if we didn't have that embedding, then you would see our website in whatever font your browser decided was a close match to what we're using, okay? And that may not be what we want at all. We want to have control. We want you to see what we have published in the way that we published it, you know, because that's the way that we want to maintain our brand. So using the Google Font API like that embedded in our website, which isn't anything other than, you know, in WordPress, it just, that's how it works. You add the font.
Yeah, the theme asks you which font you use. It usually has a couple of defaults.
Yeah, and so, and that gets embedded, and that way the font exists in the website when your browser opens it, and the font is available to the browser directly rather than relying on you to have that font existing on your computer. And that may or may not make sense, but it's the way it works. And so by doing that, if you have that in mind, because if you just grab any old font and you decide to use that and it's not embedded in, and you're just defining it in your CSS, then your users may not actually see your web page in the way that you intend them to.
Correct.
And it may be blown up and out, the layout busted on a mobile device and things like that you may not even think of, because you actually have that font and you can't tell what it would look like for someone who doesn't have it. That's one of the beauties of the Google embedded fonts.
Yeah, it's a way of dynamically grabbing from their repository of fonts and embedding it in your web page and not having to worry about whether you have it installed locally or updating it or anything like that, which is great. Which is very different than the old way where you have to go into the CSS and specify it and then specify an alternative in case you didn't have it. And,
yeah, a couple different backups and all the way down to sans serif.
Right, right. So. Yeah, that was a drag.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, but you did touch on something a second later. If you're doing website design, always check on other devices. Always check on other browsers. Don't just think, hey, it looks good, I'm done. Check it on
There's
your
some tools out
phone.
There to do that too. Yep. So if you don't have a Windows machine or a virtual machine or something like that to look at your website in different Windows combinations of browsers versus Mac combinations of browsers and stuff. There's actually web services out there that don't cost too much, and you can test in different operating system and browser configurations. So those would definitely be something useful.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I want to say that some themes allow you to do that right in the WordPress. Not that everybody's using WordPress, but you know what I mean? I mean, I think sometimes you can just do that right within your site as you're editing it. One of the things that I want to say when we were talking about cover images and logos and whatnot, if you don't have access to, say, full-blown Photoshop or anything, there are a lot of online things like Canva, which is a great site, that you can use a lot of their templates and design tools for free just to make images for your Instagram, and you can even screenshot it or save it down to your computer as a cover image potentially. What they do, their model is that you get to use like a certain percentage of their tools and templates for free, and if you want to use more cooler stuff that they have there, then you pay a subscription fee, like a modest subscription fee, and then you get access to more things, which is kind of a model that a lot of things use. You know, here's your entry level. If you want more, pay us, that's fine. That means you can use all their basic stuff for free. And also a lot of people are doing design on their phones with apps, just phone apps, iPhone apps and whatnot. A lot of great design coming out of just free apps on your phone. The same kind of thing. If you want more features, you can pay for more features, but you can get a lot of mileage out of free versions of apps and online apps like Canva.
Yeah, definitely explore all the free options that you can. So, hey, I have branding is kind of an element of, it's an element of marketing. And marketing is really like a big term, and it kind of encompasses advertising too.
Right.
So building creating your brand and all the trench work that goes on with that, with, you know, actually graphic design and your name, your font, and making sure that these things are consistent across everywhere that you present yourself are all parts of marketing. So for our listeners, and maybe for me too, the difference between, you know, marketing and advertising sometimes is kind of difficult to define. But, you know, it seems like, you know, advertising is everything about your product and how it's presented to customers or potential customers and the way that you actually introduce it into the marketplace. I think that's probably a pretty decent way to say that. And where advertising is the ways and methods that you make it known. I guess there's kind of a line there that bleeds over. And this is like an area that's kind of gray for me is when are you really working marketing versus when are you in an advertising space?
Well, the way I think of it is advertising is marketing with the intent to sell. Whereas marketing can just be getting your stuff out there, getting your brand out there. So brand is like what you're about and how you present it. Marketing is how you get that out to people. And advertising to me is getting that out to people with the intent to sell. But yeah, that's just the way I think of it. I'm not sure if that's hard.
I mean, marketing to me is like, you know, the way that you intend to do it and based and decisions that you've made on how you want to advertise, making the decisions about your brand and what that looks like and things that you've learned about your target markets and things like that. That's all part of, you know, that's that type of analysis is part of marketing.
Right.
And you use that in order to implement your advertising.
Yeah, I think one is the umbrella of the other, but I don't know which is which. I think it depends on how you look at it.
I think
you have to ask a marketing person.
Yeah, my understanding, which is basic, is that marketing is kind of the umbrella. It's the encompassing set of activities where advertising and branding are included in those, you know, in that umbrella.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But you have to have a brand first before you can do either one, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least to do them well.
Well, when you start your market planning, I mean, I guess you could be there at square one, and this is our first marketing meeting. What's our logo, guys? So that's, you know, step one. You know, how do we present ourselves to others?
Right.
So if you're the product, then when you're asking that question, how do we present ourselves to others, then you're selling your product, then that's determining your advertising of yourself. If you're not the product, but you're saying, how do we present our company to someone else, then you're not really advertising there, because advertising is related to the thing that you sell, right?
I think so. I feel like advertising is when you pay to get somebody else to pay you more than you paid. I think that advertising to me is all about money, whereas marketing is just more about outreach. And when I write notes to myself about, you know, how am I going to get the word out about blah? When I write notes to myself, I don't write the word marketing. I write outreach because for instance, for this podcast, we're not selling something, you know, but we want people to listen to it. So we want to tell people about it. And we want to do that where people can be found that might like to listen to it.
If I went out and bought an ad on Twitter to promote our episode tweets, that would be advertising, no?
Correct. Yeah, because you paid.
What if I go and I start sharing that tweet link along in other platforms? So I try to get people to go to the Twitter link, you know, to that Twitter post.
That's where you hit that gray line, I think. I would call that I would call that marketing.
I think I would too, because I'm not really. I think money is a key factor in that definition.
Yeah, I think so. So with this, we're interested in marketing because we want to get the word out, but we're not interested in advertising because we're not going to pay to run ads for this because we're not making any money on it. That makes no sense. So that's a whole nother thing that, you know, we can go down that rabbit hole in a separate episode. But in terms of just creatively outreaching and trying to get people to listen to it, we do start with the brand so that everybody knows what our logo looks like. And just like you would when you're starting anything, you want to get your URL first. You want to get your handles on all your social platforms squared away so that somebody doesn't take it. Because it's confusing when you are not able to have the same handle on every platform. Well, somebody has to remember. I have that problem because somebody beat me to the punch on one of my platforms. So I have on one of my, I think it's YouTube, I'm Mojo's Army Band instead of Mojo's Army because somebody got there first. But everywhere else in Mojo's Army, and that's helpful because people don't have to think about how to find me. So we have Indie Music Cast, and that's kind of how we present this wherever it's possible to present it that way. I didn't have more of that.
I was kind of just thinking about what you talked about there, and then I got lost in the other Mojo's Army on YouTube.
Yeah, it's
like, who takes that name?
I don't know.
You do. That's it.
It was the weirdest thing that to find somebody was already there. I'm like, who would come up with that? If not me. It makes no sense. Too late. Oh, well.
Another aspect of marketing is getting contacts and people that you're communicating with that are interested in what you're doing. How important is email with regards to podcasting?
That is a question that I can't answer. I find this opinion changes.
Let's speak from a perspective we have no clue, but let's see what we come up with.
Well, I keep asking this question every time it comes up, every time social media comes up, and every time marketing comes up, from a musician standpoint, an indie musician standpoint, there are, the heavy hitters still say that the best way to promote your brand, to promote your small business, is through email. One, because it's platform independent. If, Facebook goes the way of MySpace someday and you lose all of those Facebook connections, you'll still have an email list. That's definitely a selling point for email. On the other hand, people, I almost think it's generational. I think that younger people don't really like to communicate via email, and they kind of get offended when you email them too much. And Google now, a lot of people have Gmail addresses, and Google kind of segregates your email by default now into kind of marketing messages versus personal messages. And I know Outlook does the same a little bit. So you're starting to see this kind of like this, machine segregation of email messages, and a lot of that stuff just gets filtered. I mean, yeah. I myself have a rule. If I don't open your email 3 times, then I unsubscribe from whatever service you provide.
Nice. You should automate that.
I just want to be able to make sure, like, I don't need to see Walgreens emails. I know I'm not going to click on that.
Yeah. Well, I've got their app on my phone. I get their notifications there anyway. So
I think for a podcast, it's not useful. I think for indie musician, I think it is useful. It's a great way to do outreach to your fans and let them know what's going on with your music and your music business. But for a weekly podcast, what are you going to do? Send an email out a week saying, hey, we're still here. Listen to my podcast.
Yeah, unless there's related news or additional excerpts,
right?
Outtakes, things like that. I mean, I could see, if you are a subscriber, we've got some exclusive content, and it's another way to for that outreach to have continued interest for those who like email.
That's an interesting talk. That's an interesting concept. Having the inner circle kind of concept, where you say, hey, if you sign up for the email, we'll have exclusive content, outtakes, longer episodes, stuff that got cut.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Patreon model, except you don't have to pay for it. You just are a subscriber to it, and you don't get it if you're not a subscriber.
Right.
But if you are, so perhaps, from an indie music or an artist point of view, that's some unpublished or it's pre-release early access type of things that you can give out to people who subscribe. And in that case, it might be Patreon, but in the context of podcasts, there's still that type of thing that you could do that would be a good part of a marketing strategy for having some people who want more or it's exclusive, or in some cases it may be the only way that they really interact with your show at all.
I think a more effective thing to do for a podcast specifically would be to set up a YouTube channel. Entreat people to set up the notification bell and then put exclusive content there that's not on Stitcher and iTunes. Because people are on YouTube a lot. And it would be it would be fairly trivial to put, static image podcast audio onto a YouTube channel, have people subscribe to it, and offer exclusive content there for subscribers.
So I think that the key point on that from a marketing perspective is that you've got something different that's than your regular show.
Yeah, you have to have an incentive to go to a different platform. Otherwise, why?
Yeah. From the podcast perspective, from our perspective, with, you know, the way that we do things, that, you know, it's not, we're not driven by revenue. We're driven by our topic and our interest in what we're doing here, and our desire to interact with you, the listener, and getting more of you, the listeners, to come and interact with us. You know, that's really what it's about.
For right. Us. I think that's what makes it different. Cause email, I feel like is a great platform for sales. And for direct outreach, like a club kind of model. Yeah. But for a podcast, I think it doesn't really go with that model.
I'm sure there's podcasts out there that are based around products, and it is.
Oh, absolutely. There are, you know, I don't listen to them, but I'm sure there are,
you know, and in those cases, maybe to those of you listening that may be thinking in those terms where you've got a product, or perhaps you have a podcast that, you know, because you are like a marketing, advertising, sales representative or something like that, you know, and you're doing a podcast on that type of topic, and your real goal is to funnel into a sales pipeline with your listeners, you know, in which case, you know, it may make a lot of sense then to have like a Patreon type of model in a paid subscription type of thing where you're bringing people in and they're getting, you know, exclusive consulting content that you wouldn't get otherwise, unless you actually hired someone, you know, so you're getting something of a value in return for an exchange of money.
Yeah. You know, I'm rethinking this now, you know, so I listened to Graham Cochran's podcast, and I've been subscribing to him for years on his multiple platforms. And I guess I am subscribed to technically his podcast related email, where he does send out weekly but he kind of makes it like an email format, like not, hey, jump over and listen to the podcast, but hey, have you thought about this? Here's what I'm talking about this week. And in addition to that, has exclusive content, like links to Facebook Lives or some other contest stuff, things that are exclusive to the email list. So, you know, maybe it isn't such a bad idea after all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we would do it, but...
Yeah. One of the things that I have thought about in the past for us, and it's not because we want to make money related to it, but I would like to be able to afford to do some things, mm-hmm. you know, and have some giveaways and you know, have something to work with that could be used to give to our listeners, you know, but that's difficult to do without any, you know, any supporting revenue. But
yeah.
So if you have something like that where you can generate it, then there's a lot of things you could do as part of your marketing strategies to promote your show, as far as, you know, that type of thing with giveaways and other types of things that you would have to spend money on. And it could be, you know, physical items, or it could be training. It could be, you know, there's lots of different things. It could be that exclusive live video on Facebook that you mentioned.
That's true. You could do contests or something to generate interest and give away something of value that may not cost anything, like, as you say, a one-on-one training session or one-on-one consultation, or I'm just trying to think of different kinds of podcasts. Now, there are podcasts, not this one, there are podcasts that actually have sponsors. So that's how they monetize their podcast. They have kind of commercial breaks, either ones that they say themselves, like an old-time radio show does, or ones where they have kind of paid upfront stuff. And those, I could see you doing like a, you know, a partnership with a sponsor where the sponsor maybe provides the giveaway item.
Another thing is, if you're on a platform that is like, the example I'm thinking of is like YouTube, and YouTube is really controlling a lot of things about your content. And especially, like, let's say that you are a guitar instructor and you want to be able to teach in YouTube videos, but every time that you try to teach someone a cover song, you get copyright strikes on YouTube for your content, you know?
Yeah.
And you're doing it in the, you know, you're doing it under the premise of education,
Right. So it should be under fair use, but
it should be under fair use, but you're getting nailed for for copyright strikes as a result of it, which is detrimental to your, you know, they're demonetizing you if you are monetizing it. And then they're also defavoritizing your videos so that they're not, they don't show up as much.
Right. You know? They're downplaying your algorithm, your organic reach.
Right. And so that there's nothing good that is about that for your channel.
Right.
However, you can do that without concern if you have support from your viewers. And a lot of, so you'll see a lot of YouTubers who are running the Patreon type of model and getting their support through their viewers, because then they don't have to care about what YouTube's doing at all at that point. You know, they can just do their content in the way that they want to do it, provide what the viewers want to see and are willing to help support. And, you know, and then they're able to do that guitar lesson, you know, without, you know, without worry, you know, that they're not going to reach who they need to reach.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And that gets down a whole different rabbit hole of, okay, should I use YouTube as my platform and monetize my platform because I have 1,000 subscribers and I have ads on my videos versus not worrying about that and going to a you know Patreon paid model that supports that on the side versus going through some kind of all-in-one platform like Kajabi that hosts your videos and then becomes kind of a opt-in container for your videos where you don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
Right.
That's a whole different ball of wax. It's not really podcast related, but I'm just kind of thinking about that now.
Yeah. I mean, take these things that we're talking about because they're examples of how you might apply to your podcast. And in this case, we were thinking of in terms of publishing your podcast to YouTube and how you might, you know, try to help, try to support your podcast with some type of self-sponsorship through advertising or whatever it may be there. Because obviously there's going to be many podcasts out there that are concerned about revenues. You know, which is
sure,
which is not us. You know, you know, we're really not going that direction.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I can't say that we never would in the future or what. Who knows? You know, just keep that, keep those lanes open, and whatever happens, happens. But you know, there's no direction being pushed by me and by, and I don't think so by Matt.
No.
And
no.
You know, and we're just trying to enjoy the content and have fun doing it. So.
So to bring it back around, if you are going out on YouTube or any other platform, you want to make sure that your branding is consistent across all those platforms, which gets to be a, which is kind of almost like a one-time pain to make all of the, you know, these headers and banner images, all this, all look consistent, and they all have to be different sizes because every platform has their own style guide. You have to make this banner this size. You have to make this banner this size. And WordPress wants it this size and Twitter wants it this size. And making them so that they look the same all across the board, and then refreshing that anytime that you have a brand refresh. So theoretically, not too often, but it's part of the ramp up cost of time cost. I mean, time and energy cost of starting a podcast. And we kind of touched on that previously, but I just wanted to make sure that that was clear that, you know, whatever you come up with, your style guide, that needs to be applied to all of the places where your stuff lives, whether it's a podcast or your music.
So the style guide, how formal do you think that should be? Should you actually have a document of fonts and colors and and styles and, you know, the actual theme definition?
Yeah, it's in our Google folder. It's in our drive. It's got all of the fonts, the theme version, the last major update time, the header image, and just like general blurb about what the writing style is. And yeah, that's all in there.
That's one of those things that like is super useful when you're getting it going and starting. It's like a planning document.
Yeah.
But we really haven't used it much since, but we're going to again when we start changing our styles for the next season.
Right.
And then it'll be super useful again for that whole process.
Well, it's good to have because, you know, we all have so much to remember and we can only remember so much. And when you want to, I mean, if you ask me now, I can't tell you the name of those fonts or, or, you know, what are, the format of our titles is on each post versus what it is on the permanent slug, but that's all in the style guide.
And what if we had, you know, if something happened and we needed to go back and revert to a previous style, for whatever reason, then we'd be able to go back and refer to that document and put it exactly back to the way that it was before.
Yeah. And the way I've been thinking about this lately, and which is why I started it, not only just because I can't remember stuff, but you write these documents, these little process documents and these cheat sheets and these, you know, style guides, write them as if you're going to hand it to somebody and say, here, this is your job now. You know, you get an intern or you get a helper or, you know, something that you're working on grows bigger than you expected and you take on some additional help. You want to be able to hand them this document, say, refer to this when you're making this post. Here's the copy, go. And it's helpful. It's helpful to have those documents. And a lot of people don't take the time or don't realize that that's something that they could use in their everyday.
Yeah.
But for a one-time time cost, it saves you oodles of time down the road.
So what are some options when beginning to consider your brand? And, you know, if we take a look at the logo, you could reach out to somewhere like Fiverr to try and find a graphic designer to help you create a logo. Or you might have someone local to you that you know that's a graphic designer. There's plenty of, even for in medium to smaller size towns, you'll often find some graphic arts supply stores and maybe even like t-shirt and merch type of stores, which we have around here that do screen printing and things like that. They actually, most of those companies do graphic arts on this, you know, as part of their business offerings. And you can even go to like FedEx, Kinko's and stuff like that has some types of services that can help you with a lot of that stuff too.
Now, I would err on the cheap side. I would say that you probably know somebody in your circle or know somebody in your, you know, your Instagram feed who always has really good graphics, and you can just message them and say, hey, your graphics are great. Who comes up with that for you? And maybe they do it. Maybe they do it themselves, and they can just tell you what app they do it on. Maybe it's really cheap and simple, and you didn't even know it.
I think the hard part of that is if you don't have the skills to do your own graphic design, then trying to communicate that to someone else what you want is really hard too.
Yeah, you know, because, it can be.
because if you can't draw it to help describe, then you've got to do that in words then. So you really have to be able to define in some details what it is that you are seeing inside your head.
Right.
But that can be fun too.
That can be fun. I feel like if I didn't know how to do that, how would I do that? I might just throw some keywords into Google and then do an image search and tell somebody who has good design sense, hey, can you make me something that looks like this and I'll buy you a 6-pack? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about like the barter system. Hey, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you, or, you know, reaching out because you probably know somebody in your circle and people are happy to help. I mean, people are busy, but right this minute, people are kind of not as busy as they were.
There's so much available out there too. So I wouldn't discount, hey, take it on. You can get some free image editing programs and stuff like that, like GIMP and stuff, and get set up for little to nothing to be able to do some image editing and some graphics work. And then get on Google or get out to Stack Overflow or wherever and start trying to learn some stuff, YouTube videos, you know, I mean, the stuff's all over the place. Try to find examples of people doing things that represent what you kind of had in your mind. Like, you know, my logo had some smoke coming off of it. How do I draw smoke? You know,
right.
And you can, you know, there's your search query right there. How do I draw smoke? You know, and go look and see if it's something that you take on. A lot of times you get these tutorials that are step by step. You know, and you just got to follow along and read the directions and you'll get something that's, you know, hopefully somewhat close to what it was you were hoping that you would find. But I wouldn't discount and say, I can't do this right off the bat. You know, if you're interested in that and you find that enjoyable, then I would certainly go that route.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now there's not a better time than now to learn a new skill.
Yeah.
I still would, you know, if you don't feel like you have the skills or the time, I still would like, you know, or hit up your friend group or look in your Instagram feed, see who has good design skills or design sense. Do a little, you know, best practices research, which is my favorite thing to do. And, you know, look around for other people that either do things well or have, hey, this person or this band or this group, they have it all going on from top to bottom. I'm going to try to kind of emulate that design sense, that fashion sense, that, you know, font skills, whatever. Just kind of like look around and do a little snooping and find out what you like, what resonates with you, make that part of your brand, utilize Canva or those free tools. There's a lot of stuff out there you can lean on. Google is your friend too.
Yeah.
How do I brand my podcast?
So I think that's pretty good. I feel a lot better now that we kind of got into that, got into some weeds, got back out of it, went around the corner a few times, but we did talk about, you know, branding and marketing and advertising now as part of your promotion, you know, aspect that I had kind of intended to include last time, but we had so much to talk about. So
yeah, we ended up having more to talk about than we thought. So
yeah.
I'm glad this spilled over. I'm glad this turned into something we could dive a little deeper into.
Yeah, definitely.
And I hope that everybody kind of learned a little something. I think I did.
I did.
All right.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Cheers.
We'll be back again next week with some other topic.
Some other topic. Which we'll decide 10
minutes
before
the show.
Which we'll
decide 10 minutes before. Yeah, exactly. All right. Have a great week, everybody. Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.